like to welcome you all back to the Tip of the Tower podcast. David Morsudi here with Richard Lee Sam, right at my left side.
Hello.
Austin is preparing himself for his, I think it's one of his last days of his internship, if not very close to it. So he will be back full time with us next week.
No, Austin just doesn't care about us. That's why he's not here today.
You said it. I didn't. So you two can hash that out later in your, if you guys do that type of stuff. I'm not sure. But we got a couple of things we want to bring up today. Obviously, pitchers and catchers report for spring training. So
there's nothing like this in baseball. I mean, sorry, there's nothing like this in sports. Like, you know, and as a fan of like football, hockey, baseball, like everything, there's nothing like pitchers and catchers reporting in any other sport. Like, if let's say Kyle Lowry just decides, you know what, it's August, let's go shoot a couple jumpers. No one gives a shit. It's like, all right, cool. He's training. He's been training all.
I mean, yeah, these baseball players train all the time, but
like, I'm not saying that they don't, but like, as soon as like these guys roll into Florida, it's like, all right, guys, we're here.
When
like,
Jonas,
we're still a long way away from
when Jonas Cespedes goes in that Batmobile.
Yeah, like when people start talking about like the cars, like who was it? Thames. Eric Thames showed up in a pickup truck that was like lifted heavily, and that's a story. In
Daniel Norris with the mobile.
Oh yeah.
See, RV.
It's so funny how, and you know, I'm not saying that like these stories are a bad thing, but like it's funny how excited we get as baseball fans that like the first sign of spring is like, look at these athletes,
it's
playing
February
catch.
Like, everyone in Canada gets depressed when they hear spring training like, sometimes because it's like it's
I guarantee so you that here. Most pitchers played catch at least some point in January, right? But then as soon as they show up in Florida or Arizona, it's like, all right, guys, we're here. Like, the team isn't even there yet, but it's like, all right, we're almost at spring. Like Tulo's hurt already, you know. Baseball's here, guys. We're almost there.
Yeah, you see, it wouldn't be a Toronto Blue Jays spring training if, A, Tulo injury update wasn't happening. I mean, we were not going to get really into this, but the whole Marcus Stroman contract stuff kind of overshadowed.
When Marcus Stroman says some shit, you know, let's
not
talk.
Even say shit. It's tweet shit.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's weird because I get where he's coming from, but also it's Twitter, and like, there's no way that he'd get a good reaction from that.
I've been seeing it's been mostly positive from fans that have been tweeting back at him.
I saw a lot of stuff. Just
The other side too, but the stuff I saw too is there's overwhelming support.
What Stroman said was dumb, but you know, at least he recognized that it was dumb and started like backtracking.
Yeah, but that's where I think you have to. Somebody has to say to him, look, and this is not the first time it's happened. You think somebody would have told him?
You know what? I can't relate because all of my tweets are like just level-headed all the time.
Oh.
Yeah, so Marcus Stroman is like just like any one of us. Like if I pitched in a major league game, the first thing I'm doing after stepping off the mound is checking my phone. Maybe sometimes in the dugout, maybe just off to the side a little one of just like
well, who was it? Who was it on the Red Sox that was
Pablo Sandoval
checking his Instagram?
Pablo Sandoval was liking thirst traps on Instagram while on the toilet during a game. Pablo Sandoval is one of us. Baseball players are so damn relatable that every single thing they do is like, yeah, I've done that before.
Except for I remember it was Stroman when he was like about to fly on my private jet.
My God, that was so funny. Stroman wants to seem so relatable, but it's like, you know what?
I think that's the issue.
I just dropped my parents off my private jet. Y'all do the same. Okay, Marcus, I'm going to go get my family and fucking get them on my jet. Drop them to wherever they want to go.
I think that's the thing. He's trying really hard to connect with the fans. I mean, the whole HDMH thing is part of that. And it's hard as fans and it's hard as even media people to relate to how he is feeling because we're not at his level.
And I mean, like, I'm going to be mocked because of this. But, you know, when Justin Bieber was hated, is hated maybe, still hated.
No, he's still hated.
But it's like he got a ton of money at the age of what, 17, 18?
Yeah.
Do you expect him to be a normal person after
that? Too.
Yeah. See?
I guess 14.
That's why I guess Stroman is why the way he is. And again, it's not a bad thing. It's just he's not us. He's us, but he's not us in the sense that, you know, I can't go take my private jet because I'm getting on the TTC after this, right? But he's still like, what, 25, 26, right? So like he's one of us, but just better at life, I guess.
The only thing I wanted to really bring up with all this was not even what he said, but just the process of arbitration and that, you know, in hockey, when two sides go to arbitration, like when PK and the Habs went to arbitration, you know, shit went down.
Yeah, I mean, I would not ever be there. And
hockey players would not want to go to arbitration, but baseball, it happens so often.
And something somebody told me on Twitter, I think it was Ewan Ross, Mentalk. If I'm allowed to, you know, bump my own, be pro Toronto people.
Go ahead.
He said something that really got me thinking, and it was like, maybe it's the agents that say, you know, if the player's here, maybe that'll help me negotiate. But then it's like, would you really want that double-edged sword to, you know, you bring your agent there, then the team tears into them, and then it's like,
yeah,
hey, I got you here. So now not only are you pissed off at me bringing you here, but you're pissed off at your team, right?
Yeah.
If I'm a player, and it's so easy to say shit like that, like, if I were you, but I wouldn't want to be there, right? Because their prime intention isn't saying we love you and we appreciate you. It's here's why we shouldn't pay you as much as we should.
I don't mind the arbitration process.
Of course not.
That's not my issue, is not with the arbitration process. My issue is that you look at how contracts are structured in the NBA and in, I mean, the NFL is different, but hockey, you know, I think hockey has almost the right approach. 3 years of your entry level, almost like 3 years of a prove it to me deal.
Yeah.
Then you can sign, and then you still have, the team still has your rights for a couple of years, RFA years.
Yeah. And the difference in that is, you know, like if you're 22, 21, and you played 3 years of superstar hockey, AKA Austin, like if Austin Matthews said, you know what, I don't want to be here now, I'll just become a restricted free agent and someone will pay me. So someone either you pay me a lot, or, but then again, like hockey's so stupid where it's like, I don't want to offer sheet any of your people because I don't want to disrespect you. Fuck that.
It's not even disrespect.
Fuck that.
It sends a worse message to the player that signs the offer sheet. And yeah, he wants to get paid.
But it's such an old boys club where like they're all friends. Okay, David, I'm your friend, but if you had a star player and I wanted to win a cup, especially if we're in the same division, I don't give a fuck about you or your team. I'm signing him. A, we'll win with him, or B, you'll have that contract on. That's what the
Flyers did that to Nashville, and that was like
14 years. And Montreal's got to deal with that until, you know, 2023 or whatever it is. But, I mean, like, people don't like to side with the players because they make a lot of money, but owners make more. Owners make so much money. And I was a season ticket holder of the Jays last year. I go to, you know, a lot of Jays games. I have a lot of Jays, Leafs, and Raptors gear. And it's like, would I want my money to go towards the people that own it or the people that, you know, actually
bring the product, right? The reason why I'm going.
I'm wearing an Austin Matthews jersey, right? Austin Matthews is going to be a rich guy. Like, in 10 years from now.
He's already kind of rich with all those endorsements.
No, but he's going to be rich, like stupid rich, right? Would I want my money to go towards MLSE, even though, I mean, as a Leafs fan, I like them, you know? Or would I want, my money to go more towards Austin Matthews, the guy that can go bar down on any goal in the league?
The one thing I'll say about MLSE, marketing, they do a really good job. Yeah,
of course.
Put a lot of investment into the team through analytics and their sports science department. So they are, MLSE, I mean, still makes a crap ton of money.
And they should make the money. But players, I feel like they should get a bigger cut of the pie. And I'm saying all this because, you know, in baseball, it's more of like, we own your rights. We will control how much you earn, more or less, right? And then after, you know, all their service time is up, a lot of players are older, right? Like, unless if you're breaking into the league at 18, which is impossible to do, right? Like, and unless if you're consistently, did you just kick?
It just kicked.
Anyways, like, I'm good. Unless if you break into the league at a young age, and unless if you're consistently good from like 20 to 35, which is a Hall of Fame type of resume, you know, you aren't going to make as much as you could have made, right? So it's like, you know, let's look at a guy like Josh Donaldson,
right?
Let's pretend that Josh Donaldson falls off a cliff this year and just doesn't have any production. He was an MVP-level player 2013, 2014. He won in 2015, 2016, and 2017. He played well. you know, he wasn't under arbitration for all those years, but the Jays still controlled his rights. This was his last year of arbitration, and he settled for, what, $23
million? Yeah.
Do you think a player of his caliber on the open market would get 1 year, $23 million? He would get a lot more. And my issue with baseball is, you know, there's too much years of service time needed, right?
Yep.
And teams are going to say, we'll pay you less than what you deserve for this amount of years, and then when you are ready to hit the open market, we won't want to pay you that because we don't think you're worth it, right? And that's been a huge topic, and it's like, all right, so you pay minor leaguers peanuts. Yeah. You control them, you know, if they make it up to the big stage, like almost their entire prime of their careers, and then after it's done, it's like, we don't think you're worth the risk. Again, people will not like, you know, hearing this, because it's like, do you want the millionaires to make more? But then it's like, where would you rather the money goes, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's, you know, the huge problem with baseball today.
I think that's going to – the CBA is up soon, and that's going to be –
We're definitely hearing about this again at some
this
point.
This is going to be, I think, the biggest topic of discussion, I think, in the next CBA. Hockey – the issues in hockey is not even contract. I mean, look. Hockey doesn't generate anywhere close to the revenue that baseball, basketball, yeah, and football does.
And baseball is a huge,
yeah,
like health. Like football is a $1 billion sport. You know, playing one season could drastically like change your quality of life. And yeah, these guys aren't getting guaranteed money.
Nope. Not until Jimmy Garoppolo just signed a big deal. I think he's like probably the outlier in all this.
Like if you aren't a quarterback, you know, how much money are you making throughout your career? And that's just like, let's talk about the average player, because a guy like Marshawn Lynch, there was a story that was done about how he didn't spend a cent of his career earnings, which A, great for him, right? Like that's smart for an athlete.
But
B, you know, he got all these endorsements, and I'm not saying that endorsements are bad. It's like, the average player that signed off the practice squad doesn't get that kind of money, right? It's not like, you know, and when we talk about labor in sports, sure, they'll make more than I'll ever dream of making. But, you know, when you're the top 1% in your field, like you look at like Bruno Mars, he's a top 1% in his field. No one talks about, you know, like he makes too much, right?
Nope.
But again, it's an issue with sports fans. And something that, you know, I've been seeing talked about the past few weeks was the public perception will change if we really knew how much these owners made.
Well, I mean, Forbes is doing a much better job at, you know, putting out the revenue that each team generates. And I think I think the NBA, there's hardly any team that's not valued at $1 billion.
Yeah,
and a lot of it is because of the broadcast deal. Now the advertisement sponsors on the jerseys.
There's so much money in sports.
There's so much.
So it's stupid.
Yeah.
Like you watch a sports game, like every single thing is sponsored. Everything is accounted for, from the thing that you see on the field, the playing surface, to the food. You know, like there are contracts everywhere, right? I think that players should get more of that money just because. Yeah. And I mean, like, there will be guys like Strowman that talk about their private jet, but, you know, if I, you know, can throw a baseball 93 miles an hour with that kind of movement, I'd want that money too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we're not blaming a player for wanting to get money or getting paid. It sets a principle of where the money should be going, and I think that's a good place to leave it off, because we could talk about this all day, about how we would also like the money too.
Please, somebody give me $5.
Somebody just give me. You'd be surprised, like even when like you get your tax. You know how we get those tax credits from the government for like GST, and it's like,
you're right. You know, I will go get my private jet with that.
But you get like that $76, and you think you're like that's a couple of beers at the bar. Or something.
I got $500 in vacation pay like last week, and it was like, I'm rich. I can buy the earth with this kind of money.
All right, so as you brought up, Tulowitzki, it was revealed that he had a bone. I'm trying to think of the exact terminology. It was a bone spurt, removed from his heel or something that was not very comfortable done to his heel.
Fucking CJ. What was CJ Krohn? If it's the same thing that ended his season last year, it's because CJ Krohn was an idiot and didn't step on first base properly, which is a dangerous play. Like I played first base, and like it was like, if I step on the base while trying to make an out, like I can break someone's ankle, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, and
so it's such a dumb injury.
Remember Bryce Harper slipping on the bag,
and his knee looked like it just.
We thought his leg was destroyed.
Like I don't get why. Like
there's so many dangers in baseball.
I get crashing into a wall. I get your arm blowing up because of fastballs. I mean, I'm sorry. Not fastballs, but a Tommy John surgery and like that kind of stuff. But stuff at bases is so avoidable. Like,
yep. Well, that's why.
Especially a wet base. Like, what do you do to a wet base? Do you just not step on it? That's your job, right?
Yeah.
Man, poor Tulo. Like,
this is an injury. Like, people say, oh, he's made of glass. I guarantee any other player that is in that situation is going through the exact same thing that Tulo is right now. Does Tulo have his bad history? Of course, it's undeniable. But this is not something that he could have predicted or any other medical team would have been able to predict.
I mean, I feel for the guy because it's like he has the talent. I feel like people are undervaluing him because he's only, 33, 34? He can still contribute at a league average level, which nobody thinks he can. And it's crazy to say, he can – like I'm being optimistic that he can contribute at a league average level, but, he's been so hurt all the time that it's like
This is why I hate – and this brings back to the conversation we had back with Keegan Madison – having Kendrys Morales as the lone DH, that's really the only other than playing first base, because it takes away a DH spot for a guy like Tulo that maybe you cut back some of his starts, in the field. A guy like Russell Martin, where you may want his bat, but you don't want him catching all the time because of the wear and tear it has on your body. This is, I think, where the Blue Jays, you have to figure out what's more important, trying to manage Tulo's, season by trying to put him on the DL or having that Kendrys Morales contract.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm expecting not really big things from Kendrys Morales, but better things.
The first chance that he is producing and a team is calling, the Blue Jays should be shipping him off.
Yeah,
I think they're
of course. But I mean, I still wouldn't do it now because,
No, right now there's the Blue Jays would have to send a prospect or eat money. Yeah, I mean, eating money might be a solution that could work, but if it means giving up an asset and a prospect,
yeah, I mean, I would rather have him on the team.
I'd rather just tell Tulo.
Because he's not the best slugger, but last year wasn't really indicative of what he can do.
No, and I think there was a lot left on the plate for him, but at some point, he has to start producing. Otherwise, he's going to be spending a lot of time on the bench. Maybe that's the other option, is that he plays the bench. He's on the bench, and Tulo just gets that DH spot at times, and you give a guy – I'm not even sure who would be the front runner for the bench spot, if it's Solarte or if it's Diaz.
Just speaking of those guys on the bench is so refreshing because it's like –
we never wanted to see Ryan Goins or Darwin Bonnie.
They're so bad. They're so bad. Like, people don't know, just what positive regression can do. Like, Diaz and Solarte are projected to be league average, right? Which is nothing to really write home about. But when you're replacing guys like Goins, Batista, and Barney,
this is like
negative contributions.
This is like when you bring in Josh Donaldson caliber with three players to offset the crap that you put up with last year. Like, people, I don't think people knew how bad Jose's struggles were, but Barney and Goins, I think
it's like losing
that weren't as notable.
$10 every single day for a week, and then on the Monday of the next week finding $5, and then you're like, holy shit, I have money now, right? you know, like you aren't losing anymore. It's a very marginal gain, right? But I feel like the Jays aren't as bad as people think. Like I said, I don't know, like if I said this last week, but there are some books and projections that think the Jays will win 79, 80 games. I'm putting a lot of money on the over because, I mean, I don't think that they'll win 90, but
86, they'll be 84,
86, right? They're, you know, they're what they are, right?
It all comes down to health.
Yeah.
Like, it's not I don't even think it's ability because a lot of the issues with ability was health. Russell Martin had a nerve, I think it was a pinched nerve in his shoulder or a nerve issue in his shoulder. Not really something you want a catcher to be dealing with.
Yeah.
Aaron Sanchez had a blister in his finger. Not ideal for a pitcher.
If they have Aaron Sanchez, that's
I was about to
that's the Malcolm Kelly sports rule that
that's just a rule that everybody should
have. I don't know why I said wait. Like you watch his team like every single day, but if the Jays have 2016 Aaron Sanchez and 2017 Marcus Stroman for a full season, like if they have that for 400 innings, you don't need to have a top five offense in the league because they will suffocate you.
This was, I mean, 2015 they had, or was it 24? What year did they have like one of the best offenses in the league?
2015.
But the pitching was not there.
And then last year, the pitching dragged them into the playoffs. So
2 years ago.
We're in 2018. So I want to segue to Jaime Garcia.
Go ahead.
Because you talk about Stroman and Sanchez. Something I want to talk about is ground ball rate, right?
Yep. That was
all right. So from 2015 to 2017, a huge sample. Of all qualified starting pitchers, there are three Blue Jays in the top 10. Marcus Stroman is second, 0.1% behind Dallas Keuchel, which is a pretty good name to be with.
Mm-hmm.
You go down to number 9, there's Aaron Sanchez,
55.3.
And the guy they signed yesterday is up at number 6, Jaime Garcia. We know that the NL and the AL are two different beasts. You know, he didn't pitch that well in New York, but keeping the ball on the ground is a huge thing, right? Like it's
I mean, with pitchers, I mean, there's pitchers who are striking out at a quality rate, but I kind of jumped on your point here is that pitchers that are able to get those ground ball outs tend to be a bit, what's the word I'm looking for? It's more of a quality that teams look for now, as opposed to strikeouts, because what leads to strikeouts usually? Velocity could be one, and if your velocity's not there, location. Ground balls are a lot easier to hope for, having that ground ball percentage, than a higher strikeout percentage.
I feel like if you can strike people out and also have an elite ground ball percentage, you're a top-tier pitcher. Now, I'm not saying that Stroman and Sanchez are top-tier pitchers. I'm just saying that they're...
Well, I think Sanchez is a top-tier pitcher.
That's what their ceiling is, though,
yeah,
right?
It is.
Like,
yeah.
You know, you see guys like Stroman and Sanchez, they're keeping the ball on the ground, but they can also strike you out. The thing with Garcia is that he's not really a top-tier pitcher.
No.
But you don't need a top-tier pitcher as your fifth starter. What I liked about that is that they also have the option for next year, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean...
And he's a lefty, too.
Yeah. So
I like that as well.
That's not a bad signing at all. Like, you know, there was somebody from FanGraphs that posted something today saying, you know, the Blue Jays had a sneaky good offseason, right? They have. It's, you know.
I think they've addressed the issues that they could not last year in a more efficient way. The only part of the lineup that should concern people is the outfield.
Yeah, but I mean, a Pierce, Granderson platoon should be slightly above average.
Yeah.
Find out what you want to do with Pilar and Grichuk, because I don't want to see them both in the same lineup at the same time, because especially if they hit back-to-back, like that's like a Colby Rasmus and Justin Smoker.
I mean, I would rather see Grichuk get more, because I think he can at least
I think, sorry, I said Colby Rasmussen, Justin Smoke. I mean Colby Rasmussen, J.Pierre Sebia, which was Jesus. I can't believe that we're still watching the Jays after watching those two guys go back to back in the lineup.
My question there is, okay, I think Ezekiel Carrera's role is diminished quite a bit. I think where he lists on the pecking order is lower.
Yeah, I mean, this spring will be fun because, you know, if you're a good team, most of the time, it's like jobs are, you know, solidified and spring isn't that fun. But this spring, it's like, who wants an outfield job? You know, like, there are jobs to be had. I don't feel like it's anybody's job. Sorry, I don't feel like anyone's job is safe except maybe Granderson, unless if he, like, bottoms out. Because you know what you have with Granderson, right? But I feel like it's going to be, you know.
The young guys could easily.
I want to see a guy like Alfred try to push someone. But at the same time, I don't really want to see that yet because, you know. I mean, like, I feel like we talked about this again last week. But, you know, he played football. So it's like he still needs those at-bats where, like, he's not playing football and when he's not hurt. But he'll be a guy that'll be in the mix soon.
Yeah,
Teoscar Hernandez struck out way too much last year, so
I feel like that's something he can correct.
Yeah, but
with Triple A at bats.
Yeah, so like in a perfect world, I would start him and Alfred in Triple A. Him, Alfred, and Dwight Smith Jr. in Triple A will be so much fun to watch because it's like,
all right, road trip to Buffalo.
Honestly, like I might go there just to
I wonder how much season tickets are in Buffalo. I don't know,
but they have people at the Rogers Center all the time at the end of the year just, like, selling Bison season ticket packs.
I'm going to check that right now. But while I'm checking that, Dalton Pompey. I mean, he's not a guy that many people talk about because he's kind of, I wouldn't say he's been forgotten, but he is not.
Well, I mean, I don't want to call him an afterthought because he's still young, but it's like, he's also been a guy that's been, like, just punched by the injury bug. And that's something that you really can't fault against him because he had the concussion last year.
Yes, he did.
And one thing that was really mature was that I don't think he lied and tried to rush himself back. He took his time. And when you're, you know, you go back to talking about the minor leagues, and do you really want to play with, like, a brain injury? Like, that's not something to joke around about, right?
Nope.
So, I hope that he comes to a spring just healthy and ready to go because he's a guy that really needs, you know, like, you know, something good to go his way.
All right, so I got the Bison season tickets, okay? All 70 games. So they play 70 games at home? Wow. You want to guess how much before I give the number?
It depends what's...
So they only have two options. You get the green seats, which are the lower level, and then you get the red seats, which are kind of the two, like, equivalent to the Blue Jays would be, like, 200 and then up to, they don't really have, like, a 500 level. They only have two decks, but, like, the red goes up. So how much do you think the green ones are?
Are we talking per game?
I'm talking about the whole entire package.
So how?
There's 70 games.
70 games? Oh no! Let's save.
I wish I had the Price is Right music right now. This would be perfect.
800.
Nowhere close.
500.
$565.
560. So those are the close tickets.
Those are the lower bowl tickets, and that's about $8 a game.
You're paying $8.07 American
to watch potentially one of the. And you know what? This is kind of like what the Leafs did with the Marlies. I hate to always cross-brand the sports, you know, but
like
having a good
what kind of sports
club?
Are there in Buffalo, right? You have the Bills and the Sabres, but it's like, what kind of sports are there in Buffalo, right?
What is attractive to what?
And like, especially in the summer, it's like, and minor league baseball, I don't want to say it does well because there are way too many teams to just say, oh, it does well, right? But in small towns, I guess you can call Buffalo a small town. In a town that there's not much going on other than that.
Yeah, well, that's really like, the only summer sport. And that field is probably really nice.
I don't think that they do that well, but, you know, there are some minor league cities that have, you know, like, great attendance. Great, in air quotes, like, attendance, right? But still, you know, it's like, it must be cool to like have that team when like you don't have anything else. Like, you know, with the Marlies, it's like you have the Leafs just down the road, right? And if there wasn't that Leafs and Marlies affiliation, I don't think anyone would go to Marlies games, right?
Well, it used to be, I don't know if you remember the Toronto Roadrunners.
Oh, yes. That was years ago.
That was when the Leafs had their affiliate out in St. John. And yep. so the Roadrunners were like the second tier hockey team, other than the Majors. So there was the St. Mike's Majors at that time. Then it became the Mississauga Steelheads. Like there was not much. I mean, other than the Leafs, the Roadrunners didn't do great for attendance, but it was still an attractable market for people who couldn't afford the big league prices. Now, Marlies tickets. I wanted to bring, so we had a comparable. You know how much of Charlie Marlies tickets are?
I'm going to a Marlies game on the 18th, and I don't know how. Like, and I got the tickets for free, but I don't know how much they would cost.
The 18th. Is that a ACC game or
ACC?
Those usually are like generally the same price, like $23 or something like that. Annually for Marlies tickets is $570.
See, that's not bad at all.
Right? No, it's not.
Like, well, because there's the added benefit of like you live in Toronto, you know. You know, if you live in Toronto, there's a great chance of the Leafs being your team. And I'm not saying, I always say I'm not saying because there's always that one dumbass that goes, yeah, but I live in Toronto and I'm a Red Wings fan, right? If you're in Toronto, odds are you're a Marlies fan, right? Yeah. And it's still in the downtown core. Well, not the core, but like, you know, there, right?
And the benefit that you get too is you get a complimentary 18, like you get the suite rental. You can get round one playoff tickets because usually when the Leafs weren't in, Marlies tickets were the hottest hockey ticket in town.
Yeah.
50% off underground parking, which if anyone knows Toronto parking is a really great deal. And then there's like appreciation events, food and beverage discounts. Like there's other.
And you get to watch the Swedish god himself, Timothy Liljegren.
Exactly. The 18th. That sounds like a good game to go to if I'm not working at the CBC, so I'll see. If you're a Blue Jays fan that lives close to the border.
Yeah, like if you're a
Niagara Falls.
Windsor, no, other side. Yeah, like if you're like a Niagara Erie, Jays fan.
I mean, Hamilton and Burlington, right. Like those areas.
I mean, like I wouldn't buy season tickets and drive all that time, but you know, like.
I would go for a weekend game or a Friday game.
Just go like twice a month, right?
Yeah, my plan would probably be go to the game, take a bus to Niagara, and just make a weekend out of it for the weekend. But yeah, I mean I'm probably going to keep more of an eye on the Bisons because I think that's kind of what the approach the Blue Jays want. Ben Cherington.
Yes.
Okay, he was on 590. Wow, I think like a month ago. You don't hear from this guy often, but he may have one of the more important roles in the organization. He's kind of like the Mark Kiner was in charge of drafting, but he also has a kind of a say in development and scouting as well. Cherington might have one of the more important jobs for the Blue Jays because
and it's just all under wraps now. You know, he used to be, you know, the Red Sox at GM, and it's like, just come work for... Like, I really trust this Blue Jays front office. Now it seems like they don't really know if they want to...
They're caught in a bit of a...
the fact that they don't want to do either, the offseason that they had was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, if everything goes bad this year, you can still retool and still be decent next year, right?
Exactly.
And then, you know, you have the two big guys... that I won't mention their names, that every Blue Jays fan thinks about before they go to bed, right? Like those guys project to be stars by pretty much every single...
I mean,
they're still young too, but...
They were there before they got there, that front office got there, I think, or Bichette was drafted.
Anthopoulos had...
Well...
Sorry, he signed Vlad, but Bichette... was, I believe, a Shapiro draft pick.
Well, I think, he was...
And, I mean, he went late.
He was a 2016 draft pick, I believe, so that would make
sense. Yeah, like, he went in, like, the mid 60s, I believe. So, like,
he was a second round pick.
Like, that's great value for, you know. And then you have, like, you know, a guy like Nate Pearson, right? So,
yeah, I mean, they're investing in the right areas. I mean, the Blue Jays did have a decent farm system with Anthopoulos. It just got scorched a bit with those trades.
The thing that I didn't like about the Anthopoulos farm systems was it didn't really, you know, generate many hitters.
No.
It was just pitchers. And, like, that was it.
And guess what's the issue now, I think, is we don't have the same caliber of arms that lines up with the hitting.
Yeah. Sean Reed Foley was underwhelming. TJ Zook had a good fall league, but wasn't
he was that. The first round pick of that draft, of the 20, of the Bichette draft.
And then Connor Green wasn't that
impressed.
Great.
No.
You know, that's why they traded him, because he could, like, he threw gas, but, you know, he walked a lot and didn't get that many swings and misses. But, like, Pearson's a guy that I'm, like, I cannot wait to watch his starts every fifth day, because you have a guy that can hit 100. Baseball America has him as the pitcher with the best slider in the Jays system. If he can, you know, develop that curveball, it's front of the rotation type ceiling, right? And again, just prospects, but, you know, like, people, like, there's this common misconception that the Jays have no farm system. You know, it was just that these guys weren't ready for the bigs yet, right?
Yeah.
And I, like, I'm not going to say that they're ready now, but, you know, like, there are a lot of, like, just shiny toys that the Jays have now.
I think the issue is that there's many people who see the Yankees dip into their farm system to make these trades and still have a good farm system. But that's just an organization that has put a lot of investment into their farm, because they're the Yankees and they're the evil empire and they have the money to do it.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, I think you're starting to see the benefit of that farm system. Keegan Mathison actually talked, I keep bringing this up, but when we had him on, we asked him about Pearson, and a lot of teams did not know about him.
Yeah.
And the way he gets his velocity is a lot different than how traditional pitchers do it too. The torque is not all on the arm, it's through the hips and the legs.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to like with Pearson. I think Atkins is head over the moons with this kid.
Okay, and I'm going back to something that a fellow baseball respected Toronto person said.
Give his name.
Josh Hausum.
There you go.
Is a genius when it comes to pitchers and stuff like that. And he went to the Jays event, I think a Winterfest. And he heard, I don't know if Atkins was, I believe Atkins was talking to a group of people. But Josh tweeted this, and it said, "Holy hell, is Atkins high on Pearson? Quote, if teams had another month of information on him, his time with us in Vancouver, he would have gone 1-1. And then you read the type of stuff that's been, like, you know, written about him. I believe that they have that, you know, that Thor type person that the Jays still haven't gotten over all these years, right?
Oh, you had to bring that up. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's how teams, when you trade draft picks in baseball, you can't trade draft picks. When you trade prospects, you're just like, yeah, we traded. Okay, when people got the whole Syndergaard trade, and people were like, no, it didn't. It wasn't until after he made the league that people are like, oh my God, you traded him. But also think it was between Syndergaard and Sanchez.
Yeah.
Like, the Blue Jays had to make a choice. I mean, at the same time, they didn't really have to make a choice. They could have just been when like, no guy. But they trust in the fact that, okay, if we're going to give up a guy like Syndergaard, we have a guy like Sanchez that makes that loss a little easier to bear.
Back when they pitched in Lansing, I believe, they were known as the Lansing Big Three.
Yeah, it was
Sanchez, Syndergaard,
and Hoffman.
No,
or
Sanchez, Syndergaard, and Justin Nicolino.
Oh, right? Yes, Nicolino. Wow, Nicolino was a good prospect too. But where is he now? Right,
he was, like, he actually made a few starts last year for Miami. 8 starts, 5 ERA. He hasn't pitched that well. He's played parts of 3 seasons. But, you know, like, he's still a major leaguer. And the fact that all three of them turned out to be major leaguers, you know, one of them looks like a superstar. One of them looks like they could be a superstar. And then
one is struggling to find his way.
But he's still making starts, and that just speaks to how great, you know, like, those picks were. Right?
And that's the part that, you know, we talked about before, is that baseball and just like any draft in any sports league, there is absolutely no guarantees. There's none.
Well,
unless you're Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, then there's somewhat of a guarantee.
But when you talk about prospects in baseball, it's like these guys are kids and they're still like far ways away from. Even when talking about Vlad, like, I still have to stop and remind myself that he's still a kid, right? Like, he's still, like, he could wake up tomorrow and be completely different. I'm not saying that he will, but he's
still, you better knock on some wood right now.
Like, he's still a kid. Like, it's hard to project these guys the way that we love to project people. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they have, you know, like, you take a look at, like a bunch of top prospects, and I'm sure that, you know, like a guy like, you know, sorry, and I'm sure a guy like a Keegan Mathison, you know, like a prospects guru would tell you that all these guys actually making it to the league is a huge win, right? Like,
yep.
You don't expect, like, all these
guys. He was exactly like that. That's exactly what he said. So, yeah, it's a good way to keep, if anyone's down in the dumps about what the Blue Jays chances are, there's optimism there. Let's talk about now the Leafs, because...
Wait, what are the Leafs again? Do you mean the Leaves?
The Leaves?
It's February. It's not Leaves season yet.
Okay, you were wearing an Austin Matthews jersey. You pointed that out before, earlier. The reason why I bring that up is because he has not been the center point of this Leafs' latest barrage games. The last two, two of the three games. They played Ottawa and absolutely they didn't manhandle because Ottawa tried a stage comeback. But
Ottawa wasn't in that game.
They weren't in that game. The Leafs took it to them. Then the Tampa Bay Lightning, and Mitch Marner had the 5-point night. Then.
See, this is how I'm going to point out how deep the Leafs are. Their first overall pick, Austin Matthews, the guy that other Canadian fan bases hate because he's always being talked about, had a 3-point night and people didn't want to talk about that.
He had a nice shot, the nice goal.
I think against the Sens? That was a wicked goal because he barely missed the post.
And he got it back.
Nylander went for a skate with the puck. Drew Stone, I don't know what Stone was doing, and then Matthews just, like, walks in again. And I was he's not missing it.
Matthews just like, Willie, let's try this one again.
And then he changes the angle, and, like, he doesn't just do that. He can put it roof in, like, a second.
He has that move where he toe drags and puts it between the defender's
legs.
I don't
even think it's a toe drag. It's just him moving. Yeah.
It's just talking it back.
Just, like, and people always talk about it, but, like, he has a good shot, but then, like, he just, like, messes with you.
Yep.
But yeah, like, he had that 3-point night against the Lightning. People didn't really talk about that.
It was because that was a Nylander show. Nylander was on another
and then
level.
Marner and Kadri took over on Wednesday against Columbus, right? So it's like,
but what are people talking about?
Soshnikov?
They're talking about Soshnikov, and with the Columbus game,
Marner.
No, it's the 50 shots they let up.
Oh yeah, come on. But did they win that game, though?
Apparently, a win is not really a win when you get outshot the balls, which, I mean, yes, that's
if that happens, like, every single game, of course, that's reason for panic, but
the Leafs don't give up 50 shots often.
But
they left 40.
Anderson has been good, and this team can actually gun again. This team can fly. This team, like, Tampa Bay,
they blew the lead.
Because they allowed those two goals in, like, the 20 seconds.
Yeah.
But, like, they're flying against teams. You know, Nylander made Vasilevsky look dumb on that breakaway. Like, he just shot at blocker side, and right? And then you look at Marner, Kadri, Marlowe. A month ago, when it was Komarov, Kadri, and Marlowe, that line looked dead. The team couldn't win in, you know, regulation. The team couldn't do anything because they were just, they looked jaded. And now it's like, all right, so that line looks elite. So now you have to worry about Kadri and then Mitch Marner setting everyone up. Your fucking shutdown defenseman is on pace for another 30-goal season, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, this isn't 2013 where it's like you have James Reimer back there. No offense to him, but he was scrambly at best. And that, well, like,
he also didn't have the best defensive
no, yeah, but, you group know,
in front of him either. But yeah, no, he's not. Anderson is more. He's
a calming defenseman. I mean, goalie, goals. Right? And there's nothing wrong with a James Reimer. Like, if James Reimer won the cup this year, it'd be like, that's great. Fuck it. Never mind. He's in Florida. but, you know, you can win with that style of goaltending, but the Leafs can't win with that. Like, if you're being outshot to hell and you're a scrambly goalie, it's like they will bury you, right? With the Leafs, you have Anderson back there who's been just lights out since November, and this team can score with the best of them.
Yeah,
top two lines are good. You know, Komarov on the fourth line is, you know, all right, and then a JVR, Bozak, and
Connor Brown,
right? Like they're not going to beat anyone, but they're good, right? Like as a third best line, that's great, right?
Yeah,
but those first two lines are just, you know,
they're carrying the team.
Hell, everyone looked lost when it was Komarov, Kadri, and Marleau. Like, it was like, Kadri's not putting up points. Komarov looks like he's playing with his stick pointed the wrong way. You know, and Marleau was like, is he playing half the time? And then now it's like, all of them are just flying and buzzing. And then, you know, you see Marner with confidence. That pass that he made to Kadri was I didn't even think he was going to pass that.
And that goal he scored, too. From
hell, when Marner had the two goals... against Tampa, no, was it Tampa?
No, Ottawa. It was Ottawa.
And he's walking in on the goalie with two goals. I was like, he's going to shoot this. He finds Kadri for the tap-in, right? Again, like, these guys know where. And if that's a first line, I'm fine with that, but that's the second best line.
Yeah.
And then you have the Matthews chemistry with Nylander, and then you have Zach Hyman, who I will always defend because he will retrieve every single puck, right? Like, he'll turn a dump in from, like, you know, harmless change of possession to, you know, like, I'm going to harass you until Matthews and Nylander come, right? That's what he does well on that line. You know, like, he's not like a Komarov that will carry the guys down. But then it's like Hyman will just do his thing, right? When Matthews scored on Saturday, you know, Nylander went for a skate. He got the puck. He passed it back to Matthews. And where's Zach Hyman? He's in front of the net, like, causing havoc. Cody Ceci doesn't know what to do with him. Dion Phaneuf is just there watching, right? That's the type of thing that a Zach Hyman does. And that's why, like, I'll always, you know, want him in that top nine. I don't mind him on that first line because he's surrounded by elite athletes, right?
Yeah. And then, you know what? Okay, so... The Lightning game was a tough one because I felt like they got shelled in the last couple minutes, but that's what happens when you're trying to defend a lead. But one thing I'm a little concerned about, I mean, I'm the offense has been lights out. Anderson's been lights out. I'm worried about the right side of the defense, not just because of Roman Polak. And it was brought up, I listened to another podcast that some former guys that used to do this podcast do, the Breaking Ballard podcast. And Chris, his name is Chris O'Krantz, brought up that Zaitsev and Hainsey have not really looked themselves. I mean,
Zaitsev himself hasn't looked great all season. He's had a few moments of like, all right, cool, but for the most part, I don't really know how he's done on the PK analytics wise. But
that was something I meant to bring up.
But I mean, like, I don't mind him on the PK. But him at, you know, he hasn't been that great this year.
He's not the same player he was last year. I don't know if it's, I mean, yeah, he had that foot injury, and that's, it's going to take time for a player to come back from that. But this is not the Nikita Zaitsev that the Leafs expected. And Babcock.
It's not the Zaitsev that they signed to a 7-year deal.
I mean, look, it's the second year. Sometimes, you know, the sophomore slump kicks in. This is the first season he's playing with Jake Gardner the entire season. Yeah. Like,
He played with Riley for half the season last year, so I was wondering if, you know, maybe and Hainsey hasn't looked himself either, because he had a couple of really weird plays with Tampa goals against Tampa.
Was that the one where he tried foul to bat, and then
Dermot was
trying to chase down? Which one was that?
There was one where he tried to bat the puck down out of the air and it got picked up and it ended up in the back of the net. But I feel like and there was something that Foligno Nick Foligno brought up, is that he said the Leafs defense looked tired. This is something that I listened to on the Steve Dangle podcast, is that Foligno said the Leafs D looked tired. And I think Travis Dermott also says something about fatigue playing into one of the turnovers that he had. Hainsey has played a lot of minutes on the penalty kill that wears you down.
If they get a trade deadline pickup, I don't want it to be something flashy. Like, I feel like the Leafs should be fine with what they have, given where they are in their quote-unquote rebuild, which I still think is a rebuild. They need that guy to play on the PK, that guy that they think that Roman Polak is. Well, because Roman Polak hasn't been doing much, right? If you can, I don't even like the term shutdown defenseman anymore, but they need someone for that PK, because if Hainsey goes down for like an extended period of time, they're fucked, right?
They're not in a good spot.
But I feel like defense-wise, like other than that, it's like you have a guy like Dermott just stepping into the spotlight. And if they're all healthy, right, you know, the Leafs could do some damage, but they just need that one guy to like alleviate the pressure on poor Ron Hainsey.
Yeah. Okay. So, Fenwick is usually my favorite stat to bring up if you're bringing up possession stats, because that counts, you know, all unblocked chances, because Corsi just takes all chances. The only players that are above 50%, I mean, look, Connor Carrick is at 49.64. That's pretty close to 50. But Dermott, Riley, and then Callie Rose and Justin Hall have been playing long enough to really justify their higher standings. But you notice those three defensemen have a particular trait, and it's that they're puck moving, mobile. Position wise, they're a little bit better.
This goes back to something I said about Kapanen a few weeks ago. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people that have said this about Kapanen, but we're past the age of like the shutdown type of player, right?
Well, the big heavy,
right? And like, that's why like I walked back on, you know, a shutdown for the PK, but just someone that can control the puck, right? You don't like, not necessarily like, you know, a guy that will, sorry, not necessarily a type of guy that's like a pure offensive defenseman, but someone that's good with the puck, you know, instead of someone that just waits back and tries to block shots and like screens their own goalie, and you know, the type of person that, like, you know, what Polak is, right? Just watching him on the ice to defend that one goal lead against Tampa just gave me, because he's slow and he doesn't know where to be most times. And that's the main problem with Polak. And then, you see a guy like Riley, who's playing the best hockey of his career, and it's like he does everything well because he knows exactly where to be. He can control the puck. He knows where to do this. There was a goal. I don't remember which game it was. Maybe it was Columbus. And it started with Dermott behind his own net. And there were two forecheckers on each side of the net, and all Dermott did was he chipped it up, not even high, like a saucer pass up the middle. It either went to Kadri or Marner, who passed it to Kadri or Marner. No, it was the Marner goal.
Okay.
So he passed it up to Kadri, and it was like, you know, people don't talk about that. I know that they highlighted it after the goal, but people won't talk about that after. And it's like, I don't want a defensive defenseman that just makes, you know, the tough play. I want the guy that makes a smart play.
So hammering the puck around the boards only to get stopped at the blue line.
Yeah, just don't be like Luke Shen, right? Because Luke Shen was supposed to be the shutdown guy who loved to look up the boards. And it was like, what are you doing?
I was going
to
say that's what Roman Polak does, right?
No, Roman Polak doesn't even get the fucking... They don't give him the puck.
No, they... Hold on.
There have been so many instances in games where it's like, you know, a guy like Marner is like curling back up to like the blue line, and then he sees Polak open, like waiting. He's like, nah, I'm not going to do that. Then everyone... Watch a shift with Roman Polak that maybe doesn't involve Dermot because maybe he's still a bit too new. Watch how many times they look off Roman Polak, right? He doesn't get... And I'm not saying that Travis Dermot is a shutdown defenseman. I'm just trying to say that, you know, like that's the type of guy that we need just to make the smart play.
He's been dragged down by Polak as well.
He said something after the game, like saying... So a reporter asked him how safe does he feel playing... to Roman Polak. And I was like, that's just a funny way to word it. And then Dermot was basically like, I feel comfortable having him beside me. Do you mean on the bench? Like, as like a bodyguard? Or do you mean on the ice? Just as a guy that, you know, you're trying to keep the other team from scoring, right? And I mean, again, I don't know more than Babcock does. You see what they did with Matt Martin, who obviously has a bigger effect on the team than Roman Polak does.
I would argue that Martin, because of the limited time he's playing, yeah, that had an effect.
No. I mean a total effect on like everyone, just on the ice, off the ice, you know. Because Polak doesn't make that much of like an influence on the ice. I don't know what kind of, you know, presence he has off the ice.
I don't think it's what...
But I know all the guys are close with Matt Martin, right? And they still put him in the press box. So.
I was going to bring that up is that the moment that Mike Babcock said to Matt Martin, you're not cutting out for it, that was the moment that he finally said, it's not going to be, you know, contract status, veteran status. It's going to be purely performance. And that makes Babcock... That what it looks like to me is that it's not integrity, but it's...
Accountability?
Accountability. Thank you.
Well, I mean, then you see who replaced Martin, a guy that, you know... I will call Kapanen the Roadrunner because when he has the puck, he takes off.
Did I help you pick that one out when I mentioned the Toronto Roadrunners earlier?
No. Like
just a happy coincidence.
When he scored that a shorthanded goal, I was like this is a Roadrunner, right? Like he gets the puck, he just flies. There was I don't remember which game it was, but it was the most effortless breakaway I've ever seen. Not quite, you know, the speed of Connor McDavid, but just the way that he takes the puck and glides, right?
Well, not only that, it's that he's away. He looks behind him, he's like, there's nobody else.
I want to see that guy get some 3-on-3 time with Nylander.
Oh.
That would never happen because, you know.
That would never happen because Nylander needs a guy like Matthews around him.
I don't think he needs him. I think it's just that they work so well together. It's like, why would you?
Yeah. I mean,
on a 3-on-3 line with anybody, just, fuck it, Roman Polak. Because you could put Polak in front of the net, you just have a turnover in the defensive zone, and he's gone.
You know, I was about to say, you know that Polak's job should just be to stand in front of Anderson there.
And what I love about 3-on-3 is that it's so chaotic. Like, when the Leafs got scored on by, I don't remember who it was, but people kept on, like, breaking down the defensive play in 3-on-3. Why do you think they implemented 3-on-3? Because no one knows how to fucking play defense. That's why games end so fast.
Well,
like
some teams have figured it out.
No, watch just any 3-on-3 video on Twitter, Facebook, and don't read the caption, right? And this is what I find myself doing, right? If you don't read the caption, you guess who's going to score. There's no way anyone knows because a team could have the puck hit the offensive zone, and like you could be like, this is who's scoring right now, and then they turn it up into like a 3-on-0 the other way, right?
Because
nobody knows what to do on a 3-on-0, right? Like, you could be the smartest player in the league, and still just not know when, you know, like a guy like McDavid just turns on the burners, right?
He's probably the best player 3-on-3.
Yeah, well, because he's fast and he's, like, skilled, right? And that's why, like, if you make a mistake anywhere on the ice,
you're screwed.
Like, it could be game over, right? And that's what I want to see with Kapanen because, you know, if he gets the puck anywhere, like, hell, the goal line. Say there are two, like, offensive players on the goal line and the puck is in the crease and Kapanen just, you know, goes and gets it. He's still gone even though he's facing the wrong way, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why I think everyone loves 3-on-3 so much because it's not, you know, like a defensive spectacle. It's, you know, the games that go to, you know, shootouts after 3-on-3 is rarely like a boring game, right? Because it's blown coverage, it's 2-on-1s, it's, you know, the best defensive plays that you see in the 3-on-3 are on those like those 2 and 3-on-1s, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why like, I can't wait to see Kapanen, you know, play on a 3-on-3 and like have like a fast guy beside him just to watch them like fly up the ice.
Exactly. Okay. We're going to kind of go into a bit of trade stuff. So Soloshnikov.
I feel like they should trade everyone.
Yeah?
Just trade. I want to see some trades. Let's go.
Okay, so Nikita Soloshnikov finally gets dealt, and people are just like...
Crazy? Yeah, I know.
That's it? I know. This is what I found hilarious. There was, I think it was Dark Guy. I always forget his actual name.
Starting any statement with, I think it was Dark Guy.
I know it was Dark Guy, just I can't remember his actual name.
Is it Mason?
No. No, I'm not even going to try to attempt, because that's just not fair to him, but... He brought up that you see what he did with the Marlies, and that's all the Leafs could get.
Jason.
Okay, yes. There we go.
What's up, Jason?
It's the last name is the one that always gets me.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
But actually, do you have his Twitter in front of you at all? Or I can look it up. I'm gonna bring up his tweet because I think he perfectly sums up the issue that I have with the trade and base and the reaction for the trade. I'll say that. Let's see.
I've on the positivity kick, trying to encourage people not to bash players on the Leafs, coaching or management.
Oh, here we go. I got
it. Oh, you seriously going to try to tell me that the best we can get for Soloshnikov or Levo is a fourth rounder?
My problem is that, okay, and then he brings this up. Okay, folks, don't get me wrong. I'm happy for Sosh, and no move had to be made. My problem is that with the asset management here, surely we could have packaged Sosh with Levo. So that's two wingers that don't play, have not played.
See, there you go.
And a draft pick for something that can help now instead of just a fourth straight up. That is all.
Maybe. Maybe if they're both tearing it up in junior as like
or
high.
In the Marlies.
Right? Like as like high picks. But Soloshnikov and Levo haven't played a full season's games worth in like 3 years.
They have never. I don't think any of them have ever played a full season.
And people want to talk about, you know, asset management. And it's like, what? Like, what else would you want for that?
Do you want me to explain asset management for how it does not apply for Soloshnikov? Do you know how the Leafs got Soloshnikov in the first place?
A free agent signing.
Yeah. There was no asset. There was no investment made other than the contract and the contract space. So this is a guy who his career high.
I think he can be a top six player in the league, maybe, right?
That's like the same asking a lot.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe.
But maybe. Even if he does, it's like the Leafs still don't lose that trade because what kind of value do we expect to get from him, right? Like.
This is
the
my
value. It's pretty good to get a fourth, right? For someone that's not proven, for someone that hasn't played.
This is my argument. The most he ever played was 56 games last season. How many points did he have? I know he didn't play a lot of minutes, didn't play a lot of offensive situation. He had 9 points. You're going to tell me that you expect a team to just fork out anything higher than a fourth round pick for that? Okay, yeah, he had 17 points in 19 games with the Marlies this past season. That's AHL numbers. And that's his. That was his. That would have been his third AHL season.
He's also 24 too, right? Yeah. So like, it's not like it's like a 21-year-old or 20-year-old like just flying onto the scene.
And the other thing too is that, look, a fourth-round pick now for the Leafs can be something that's pretty valuable.
It's a great trade for the Blues because
it's a great trade for the Blues too.
You know, the fourth-round pick might not even turn out to be anything like a Soshnikov, but it's a low-risk guy that you know, if you have a spot on your roster for him, you know, like a speedy type of winger with
a bruising shot. bottom six yeah. guy. It's the perfect addition.
But then it's like the Leafs pretty much have their line set, right? Top nine, you aren't really taking anyone off, right?
No.
And even if you did take someone off, like say a guy gets, I'm not going to say names, but say someone gets hurt. Again, exactly the thing I said last week, you know, you have the depth. Because there are still guys that want jobs, that will be challenging for jobs. Komarov and Bozak might not get re-signed. There are still bodies that will be there, right? You know, Levo and Martin probably won't be a part of the team's plans going forward. There are still people that are waiting to come in, right? So it's like, do you want to give this guy the Frankie Corrado treatment where it's like he's in the press box all the time?
They did. The Leafs did him the big Soshnikov, the thing that Levo probably wanted.
Yeah, just free him, right? Just give him a chance to shine somewhere.
You brought up a great point. And remember, we talked about this with the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays had to make a tough call on Syndergaard, but they knew they had Sanchez. The Leafs, this is probably the easiest decision they could make because, yeah, Soshnikov could turn into something, but they got...
But it's so much worse than just saying it's like Sanchez. See, like that's like saying, you know, that there's only room for four starting pitchers, right? And Sanchez has one, and the other three are guys that have contributed and will contribute, right? There's just no room for them at all. At all.
There's none. You look at the Leafs wing spot, okay? I look at their I'm gonna actually pull up the entire Leafs. Give me one second here because I feel like this will help me make my argument that I want to make, because when I think about that with what Soshnikov has been dealing with, okay, this is not like what the Leafs did. How many years ago would this have been when they traded Steen? And Koliakovo for Stepniak.
That was like Cliff Fletcher's like last like
hurrah.
Whoops. He's like, you know what? I'm on the way out. Let's just get weird, guys. He's like, he starts calling like every GM at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Let me bring up the farm system because I don't want to miss a guy. I don't want to be that guy that misses someone. And this is proving to be a lot more difficult than it should be. This Mac keyboard is actually not the best right now. All right, so we already know the wing. I'm just going to bring up the wingers on the Leafs right now on the roster. Hyman, because I'm just going to go by order of the lines. Hyman, Nylander, Marner, Marlowe, JVR, Brown, Komarov, Kapanen, Martin, Levo. You telling me Soshnikov?
The only person that I would replace out of that list is Martin or Levo, and it's like, all right, so did you just want to ride around with the team in the press box?
Exactly. All right, let's now look one level down with the Marlies. Jeremy Bracco. Martin Zirkles has been a fringe AHL player. Carl Grundstrom is still in Sweden. Andreas Janssen has been
a star
for the Marlies, who would be, like, if the Leafs had another injury...
Call him up.
He's getting put over Josh Levo.
If they have a fourth line guy go down, I think that they would put a Levo in. But if they had, a Zach Hyman, right? Mm-hmm. Then they would try to, shape the lines and then bring him up, right?
Yeah. Like Dmytro Timoshov. I mean, Kirby Reichel's his role with the team is pretty much, I don't know what his role is anymore. Trevor Moore. Mason Marchment's not on this list, and I'm not sure why. But I look at one guy I look at. Okay, Jeremy Bracco, he's 20 years old.
I mean, he was not a first or second round pick, so it's going to second round pick, I think. Late second, early third round pick. He's a guy where I look and I say, where does he fit in? I mean, yeah, he could probably play his off wing. He's a right winger. Maybe he's okay to play his offside. But again, the Leafs wing situation, this is why I looked at their last few drafts and I'm like, why are they drafting so many wingers? Wingers are hard to get value with. I mean, Soshnikov didn't have much value to begin with, but I feel like now the Leafs need to start going after defensemen and centers.
That's where, I mean, I feel like in a sport like hockey, you can't ever draft for need because...
No, but, I mean, when you're looking at the third round,
yeah,
and you have a choice between a couple of guys, and maybe the best available is a winger, okay, cool. And you could have drafted a center, I would probably take the center. When you're doing the first and second round, like, look, Lilligren was probably the best. Actually, there was an argument to be made. I think there's still an argument to be made that a guy like Eli Tolvanen, who is, if you watched the Olympics the other day with Finland, had 4 points and was a beast. And he was a 29th overall pick. And he looks like a guy that should have gone top 15. Yeah. I mean, the Leafs had a chance to pick him, but they decided Lilligren was the better pick. And maybe that's a case where defense kind of ruled that.
No, but then again, you know, like, there were people that had... You know, so going back to September 2016, like, there were people that had Timothy Liljegren, you know, going top five. So I feel like that's why they took him, partly because, like, there was so much value there that it was like, he shouldn't be here at 17.
Yeah. So that's the main argument with the whole Soshnikov thing. The Leafs just have so many wingers and so much depth there that, A, he had a hard time going past, especially at his age, 24, and you have injury problems, staying healthy. It doesn't bode well to try to keep a full-time job in the NHL. And the other thing is that the Leafs should not even be worried about what they get for a guy like Soshnikov, because you're...
You aren't taking from your roster. You're hurting the Marlies, who are still a top
team. And he wouldn't even be able to play for the Marlies unless he went on waivers, which then you lose him for nothing.
Yeah, so...
That was the only options the Leafs had were lose him for nothing, trade him for a fourth rounder. Now, to bring up the argument of trying to package a pick, Levo and Soshnikov, and try to improve the team now...
You'd get a third. Maybe a third.
You would get a fringe defenseman that wouldn't even help this team.
You would have a guy that would want to be off the market next year.
That draft pick better be great, because teams are not going to see Soshnikov and Levo as the pieces that they want in a trade, especially for a rental player.
Yeah.
You tell me if you go to the... Okay, I'm going to bring up... If I'm thinking of rental players... okay, you go to the... Fine, we'll use Rick Nash. Hi, New York. This is our offer for Rick Nash. All right, we're listening. Nikita Soshnikov.
All right, go on.
Okay, he's fine.
It's about to get good. All right, let's go.
Josh Levo.
Okay, come on. Who All else? Right. Lay it on
and
me.
And then let's do a third round pick.
I'm sorry, did you say and a third round pick or a third round pick, comma? Is there more? What else? Lay it on me. I'm ready.
Like, okay, yeah. Rick Nash is probably would want to fetch a first round pick.
But I would hang up on them just as soon as you try that, because, hey, so you're selling your Mercedes? I'll give you my Camry plus my TV.
Your tube TV that weighs like
it's like a TV pounds. That like I have no need for, you know, trying to get it out of the house. What do you say?
Okay, I'm gonna bring up one last thing. Yeah, like, unless you package a second round pick, which I think can be even more valuable than a first round pick, and in some cases, teams are gonna hang up the phone on you. You want to know something about fourth round picks? They're actually not bad. I was looking up guys who were drafted in the fourth round the last couple of seasons. Like, this year's the 2017 draft. Like, I don't know how much you can expect. I mean, you watch the World Juniors, right?
Drake Batherson played for Team Canada. He was a fourth-round pick.
Yeah.
He could turn into a contributor in the NHL.
I mean, like, it's – they traded a guy that didn't have plans – sorry. They traded a guy that wasn't in the plans for a lottery ticket.
Yeah. Okay. Who was the Leafs draft pick, the fourth-round pick last year, not 2017, but 2016? Adam Brooks. Who, if you're thinking of a guy that's going to contribute more towards – Adam Brooks is also a little bit older when he got drafted, so his timeline's a little is shrunk a little bit, I think. But look, the Habs selected Victor Mete in the fourth round, and he made the NHL the following season. He played 1 year in juniors and made the NHL. There are guys, I'm just looking here, like the Leafs had picked Jesper Lindgren, but there's, he's a longer-term project because he's in the Swedish league. Their fourth-round pick in 2014 was, J.J. Pickenich, who's an AHL guy. But you know who Nashville picked in their fourth round? Victor Arvidsson.
Yeah, see, it's like...
You can hit those picks. I mean, if you scout well. Danton Heinen, who is their third line center in Boston, was picked in the fourth round. So I hate this idea that, oh, it's just a fourth round pick. Maybe sixth, seventh pick, round picks, you can make that argument. Fourth round picks have some value. So I think people need to be realistic on
what. So there's a guy on the third line that was taken in round six, 2012.
You want to know, okay, 2000 and what was it, 11 or whatever year Tyler Biggs was picked. That wasn't the year. Sorry.
You're talking about Connor Brown?
No. I mean, Connor Brown was picked in.
Yeah. So Connor Brown went in the sixth round in 2012, and Garrett Sparks, who's now a wall in
the AHL.
Was taken in round seven in 2011.
Okay, 2014, this was the year. Andre Kesse, he plays for Anaheim. The Leafs traded traded that seventh round pick to Anaheim. This guy has 30 points in 43 games.
Yeah.
So don't tell me late round picks don't mean anything. If you scout and you draft, maybe you reach on a guy, it will pay off. And they're not all going to pay off.
I mean, like, it's not like, you know, they need this to pay off or else, you know, they lost a trade big time. It's
no.
You got a lottery ticket for a guy that you aren't going
to
use.
And if you wanted to make a move at the deadline, guess what? You're at the 50 contract limit. Now you're not as hard pressed to trade away a prospect or something just to make the contract work. That's also why people didn't like the Roman Polak signing later in the season because they could have.
It's so funny.
Not
had you that talk about draft picks. I think I said this last week too, but
oh yeah,
they're picking in the second round because they traded Polak and who was it, Reimer? To the Sharks, and I believe that they took back Rafi Torres, and what's his name, the goalie.
The guy who shut us out against Minnesota. Why am I blanking on his name right now? Current. Oh my god.
That wasn't the Reimer trade. It was traded from the Toronto Maple Leafs with Nick Spaulding for Rafi Torres and the second round pick in 2017. No, with two. So it was Polak for Torres, you know, that had dead money.
Alex Stalock was the goalie.
Yes. For two second rounders. And one of the second rounders was traded for who?
So the Reimer trade was a couple of years ago.
Yes. So they got back two second
rounders. That was in 2016. One of the second round picks. They traded one of the second. Oh, yeah. Brian Boyle, wasn't it?
No.
No, sorry.
Phil Kessel turned into Kasperi Kapanen.
Oh yes,
and Frederick Anderson. What a deal that was, right?
Yeah,
because the first round pick that they got from Pittsburgh was traded to Anaheim, and the second round pick that they got from the Sharks went to Anaheim.
That's right.
And people are mad because Sam Steele. I don't give a shit about Sam Steele because the Leafs are good, not like an elite team, but they're really good, and Anderson is a huge reason why.
Would you rather have right now Sam Steele in your prospect system or Frederick Anderson in that?
I actually love prospects, so I don't care about Anderson. You have to give up something to get something. And the first round pick was 30th overall.
Okay. Yeah, that was because Pittsburgh won the cup.
So basically, you eat some of the Kessel money, but you get Kapanen and Frederick Anderson, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to bring up. Okay, so that trade that so the Blues traded Leafs traded Carl Gunnarsson. Okay, here. This is the trade. So Leafs traded Carl Gunnarsson, the 94th pick. In what draft was that? That would have been the 2014 draft. Let me look this up. Because the one thing you have to look at here is that teams can make picks work. The Leafs have made some dumb decisions on picks. No doubt about it. Other teams have done that too.
Wait, so you're telling me that Tyler Biggs wasn't a good pick?
Oh, Tyler Biggs was dynamite. I don't know what happened. It was all a blur. Okay, so the Blues from Calgary via Toronto. Okay, I think that pick that the Leafs traded was originally Calgary's pick. Yes. Toronto previously acquired the pick. Okay, do you want to know where Toronto got that pick from?
Where?
From Calgary in 2000. This would have been, they would have gone in like 2012, I think. Let's see. Yeah, the Leafs would have gotten the pick in. Yeah, the pick up was
in. Oh, I see. I see that. I see where this is going.
You remember Joe Colbert?
See, that's why people, you know. Well, because you don't know. I feel like we've spent way too much time talking
about
a fourth round pick. I mean, people are going.
This is the issue now with trades. It's that those little pieces get
of course
way too much. All right, let's talk about the trade deadline. We said last week the Leafs should not be buyers. Craig Cutson's actually put out. I don't know if you read The Athletic. Put out a great piece, not for the rental market for this year, but the rental plus. I call it the rental plus market because you get them for this year and next season. So if you were, I'm going to pull up this article because it's easier to pull it up on my phone because I'd have to log on to the computer for the get past the paywall. Okay, so here we go. So, Cousins called this article the top non-rental players to target at the NHL trade deadline. I think if you're a team, and after reading this article, if you're a team that has a guy that you don't think you're going to be bringing back after next season, considering how bad the trade market is now, try to capitalize. So, these are the guys that made the list. Erik Karlsson.
Of course.
I don't see Erik Karlsson being traded this season, as well as Oliver Ekman-Larsson. He's not being traded. Ryan McDonagh is a name that's interesting. If he was a right-handed shot defenseman, I would say sign me up. Because his contract next season is great, and he's actually not a bad defenseman. He would fit with what the Leafs need. But he's a left-handed shot, so the Leafs would have to figure that out if they were to try. Max Pacioretty. If I'm a team and you're looking at a guy like Rick Nash, Evander Kane, but then Max Pacioretty's thrown on the board?
Yeah.
It's
not like they need him now, right?
No. Mike Hoffman would be another good option because he's made the Leafs look silly at times.
Yeah, he's very underrated. Like
I don't even know why Ottawa wanted to trade him.
Guys like Stone and Hoffman don't get they really don't get the credit that they deserve because it's bad in Ottawa right now, it'd be so much worse. Like if they didn't have a guy like, you know, Stoner Hoffman there.
Yeah. Justin Falk.
Okay, I can see that kind
of. The issue is, remember the initial rumor that people thought, oh, Carolina would want a guy like Mitch Marner for Justin Falk. Yeah, that's not happening.
Everyone wants a guy like Mitch Marner anyways, right?
Exactly. Falk is more of an offensive guy. I'm not sure if he's what the calming presence on the blue line leaves need, but he's not a bad choice. Derek Brassard. This guy was interesting because he was slided nicely in the third line center role for next season.
Yeah.
His cap hits a little high at $5 million for a guy that would probably be the third line center on the Leafs, but if the Penguins get him, watch out. Jean-Gabriel Pajot. I got to go with the French there.
No, so like it's just like all the Senators then, right?
Well, okay, but the Senators are the team that need to kind of retool on the fly because they gave up a first-round pick for Matt Duchene.
I don't think they need to retool. I think they just need to I feel like if they try to retool,
they can't rebuild because then your chances of giving up a first overall pick are very high.
Where they are right now, I feel like, you know, they're like the ship has already sailed there, right?
Okay. All right, here's a non Ottawa center, Gustav Nyquist, another winger the Leafs don't need. Brock Nelson, I think that doesn't really work out to what the Leafs need. Because he's a streaky scorer. Yeah, he's a center, but the Leafs, I would rather just have Bozak. Just because I don't think Brock Nelson's what they got. Matt Zuccarello, another winger. He's a guy that's kind of underwhelmed this season. John Gillies from the Flames, goaltender. Leafs don't need a goalie because Frederick Anderson. Jimmy Howard.
Yeah, let's trade for a guy like Howard and just piss off everyone in the organization.
Exactly. Max Domi. Again, another winger.
Okay, wait. Let's just talk about Max Domi for a second.
Oh, this is okay. Go ahead.
Do you remember when the Leafs won the lottery and Toronto talk shows were a buzz? Well, you know, Austin Matthews is from Phoenix and Max Domi's from Toronto, so maybe you should just like trade each other for no wait the first
trade down to try to yeah, get just Max
Domi. No. They wanted the Phoenix pick plus Max Domi for Austin Matthews. Who did Phoenix end up taking?
What year was this?
2016.
Oh, the Matthews draft?
Yeah.
It was Dylan. Sorry, no. Not Dylan Strome.
Strome was 2015.
2015.
Keller, who's pretty good.
Who's good, but he's
but
not.
But do you want to trade down just because?
For two wingers.
And it's like, that was the dumbest thing. Like, it was like, you guys haven't seen Austin Matthews play. I haven't either, but you want to trade someone just so they could be home? Why would you do that? Like, Austin Matthews now is trying to sell people, you know, like on Toronto at the All-Star break, right? So that's another reason why you just...
Yeah, shake your head.
Oh, my God.
Okay, here's another name. Danny DeKeyser. Again, I'm not sure what DeKeyser would bring. Like, they're guys that would attract other teams. Like, this is a way better list than what this year's trade rental market looks like. So I can see where the argument can be made that, I mean, the Leafs are not going to be moving guys. I don't think any of those free agents are going anywhere unless you can get an upgrade on Tyler Bozak and you tell a team, just take Tyler Bozak off our hands because he's slowing down. He's not the same player he used to be. Connor Brown has looked invisible. James Van Riemsdyk he's done what he's needed to do.
Yeah, like He's had a pretty good season.
Offensive season.
Yeah.
But imagine if that third line, okay, Connor Brown would be a part of it, but if it had more of a, I mean, I'm not expecting a lot from the third line, but more of a defensive presence with some scoring ability.
Yeah, I mean.
So that you can roll out them more. I think that should be the focus for next season is to solidify that third line up front. Centers are going to be tough to find. That's the only issue. But yeah, those are the. And I wrote an article earlier this week about the what the Leafs' biggest need would be at the deadline, and I still argue that it's a center because from what I've seen from the defense, the Leafs should I think consider Justin Hall again because I think his style of play works better with the Leafs' forward group in that he's more mobile and he's not a guy that's just going to ring the puck up the boards. He makes the smarter plays, but Babcock doesn't trust young players. You give him time in the minors, but Justin Hall has done his paid his dues. And he looked, I mean, look, It's not even the offense I'm looking at that he had.
It's such a low bar to clear.
Yeah.
Just to be better than Pollock and, you know.
You just want, I mean, look, Connor Carrick, I don't think the reason why he hasn't played that much is he has not blown people away. I have not seen anything from Connor Carrick yet. Would I prefer him over Pollock? Probably, just because I think Dermott style plays a better with a guy like Carrick, who's more of a puck mover. But Carrick has not shown that he can be enough to push a Roman Pollock out. Like, you need, in order to, like, look, Kasperi Kapanen pushed out Matt Martin because he was over the moon, way better.
I mean, like, he's being trusted to kill penalties too, right? So, like, it's not just like, you know, you're a fourth line depth guy. It's like you're a
Connor Carrick does not kill penalties, unfortunately. I mean, yeah, could you teach a guy to kill penalties? Yeah. But Connor Carrick, when he first arrived with the Marlies, was more of a power play offensive guy. But Dermott is not that style, like, that's not what Babcock wants.
Yeah.
So that's again why the free defensive trade market is just it's not gonna work. I said a guy like Chris Tanev makes the most sense, but he's gonna cost a lot. But at the same time, he has injury issues too, so it's like you're setting yourself up for a problem. I would have just preferred if the Leafs were gonna trade for a defenseman, a guy that can push Ron Hainsey down in the lineup, or Zach.
A guy that won't allow Ron Hainsey to be killed. Exactly. Pretty much should be the.
And then a center that you can say is better than Bozak, and you're fine with having him in. So that's my view on the trade deadline. I don't think the Leafs should be hard pressed to do anything unless a team all of a sudden decides, yeah, we're gonna move this guy off. What would you like to take a shot at him? Like, and I'm not even talking about a rental, like a guy that maybe is around for next season. The team just like, we need to offload something. So, that's all I really have to say about that. I don't know if you have anything you wanted to bring up. The Leafs play the Penguins on Saturday night.
Another measuring stick game. If they outplay the Penguins,
a measuring stick game. I hate that term. But
that's all anyone wants to say when the Leafs play someone good. Measuring stick game. Measuring stick game.
How about it's a team? It's
like,
a,
you watch it's that a, game against Tampa. It's like, how is, like, Tampa is the best team in the league.
Yeah,
they have everything, and the Leafs jumped out 3-0, you know, blew the lead, and then still won in regulation, right?
Yeah.
If they had blew the lead, lost in regulation, it's like, all right, maybe they're not, you know, primed for the spotlight.
Also, Vasilevskiy did not look good.
Yeah.
Just want to bring that up.
Right? So it's like they were flying against them, right? So
I think Pittsburgh is a matchup I would like to I'm not going to say
team
that's,
you know,
that's
in that division.
A contender in the East that you could see as a conference final.
Washington or Pittsburgh, I want to see how they match up against them, because, like, they've beat Boston. The last time out wasn't that good, but they beat Boston.
They've beaten Boston.
Did they play Tampa well? Like, the first time Tampa came,
they lost 1-0.
Was it 2-1? Yeah, right? So, like, and it was that dumb goal that they had to call back down in, right? So, another measuring stick game, and we'll see how they do, but if the Leafs play well against Tampa, I mean, against Pittsburgh, just fucking start the playoffs, because, like, they're 20 points up on their next on Florida or whatever.
Exactly.
Right?
So, and then I'm curious to see how many teams that are maybe in the hunt for the playoffs decide, look, there's only X amount of spots. Let's take a step back, maybe unload a contract.
Like New York, and just, like, they're there. And
if I'm a team like Philadelphia, a team like New Jersey, I mean, New Jersey is kind of in a rebuild, but teams like that would open up a lot more opportunities for a team. So
the best part about this season is that the Leafs are so far up in a playoff spot, and they still have to play the Sabres 4 times.
Oh, yeah. That's going to.
So that begs the question.
Without Jack Eichel.
That begs the question. Can they jump Boston, or will they track down Tampa?
I think I have to see how
Boston
is playing.
Right now they're on
lately.
Fire, but they're still behind Boston, who's also on fire, and then Tampa. But it's so Tampa.
I think second is reasonable if Tampa or Boston slips up for a couple of games.
Tampa has a game in hand, and they're up 6 points on Toronto. Boston has 4 games in hand, and they're up 3 points.
I have to see how many times Tampa has to play Buffalo as well. I mean, Buffalo has beaten Tampa, and they've beaten Boston. 2 days ago. And Buffalo beat Boston. So, I mean, at the same time, the Leafs should be careful with, with Buffalo. I mean, Jack Eichel's hurt. The Sabres goaltending is suspect, so that does help as well. But I think after the Pittsburgh game, I think we can have a better idea of where this team can
It's so go. Funny how, like, the division has pretty much been decided in mid-February.
It's just, yeah, because there's Ottawa, Buffalo, Montreal, 3 worst teams, 3 of the bottom feeder teams in the league in one division.
Yeah.
That does help. And Florida has not looked great. And Detroit has been up and down.
Florida could still climb back in things. But if they climb back in things, they aren't catching Toronto.
It's for the wild card.
Yeah. Like they're playing Carolina.
That's a team, again, that maybe they need a different mix somewhere and someone needs to do something.
Yeah.
Maybe, hey, is there an Ekblad available? Which never would happen, but.
Yeah, let's just go find an Ekblad somewhere.
Just say, hey, you know what? You guys are close, but you know if you trade an Ekblad, it may help you out in the long further down the road. As we give those stupid trade suggestions, I think that's a good time to end this. Again, we'd like to thank you guys for listening to a longer version of the Tip of the Tower podcast, but we spent, I think, a little too much time talking about a 4th-round pick in Soshnikov, but hey, that's what podcasts are for. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search Tip of the Tower. Go to Block Talk Radio, and you'll find our past few episodes. Recommend the chat with Keegan Matheson. I think that's the one that you can bring up at any time and still becomes relevant. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. I'll give Austin. I didn't even forgot to ask Austin the.
Shut up, Austin.
Hey, Austin, how many more followers do you get? See, he's not here, so we can't answer that. But if you want to follow Austin just to make him happy, _AustinOwens. You can follow Richard at RLeeSam, myself at D_Morisuti, 2 S's, 2 T's, 1 R. Thank you guys for listening. We'll probably wait a little bit for the next podcast. Want to get a couple more Leaf games under the belt. We'll look at the Raptors players that competed in the All-Star game, which I'm a little bit intrigued to see, although the Rising Stars Challenge, I'm not going to get into that. We'll get into that next week because I think that's the perfect time to do it. Thank you, guys. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the Olympics. About a week and a half left, so enjoy those while they're still going on.